This episode of the Practical Significance Podcast is brought to you by Stata. For over 40 years, Stata has been the trusted statistical software choice for researchers, analysts, and data professionals who demand accurate, reproducible results. From data management to visualization to advanced statistics and reporting, all in one intuitive platform. Backed by a global user community and expert support, Stata empowers you to focus on your research, not your software. Discover how Stata can power your research and analyses by visiting stata.com/amstatpod.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, welcome everyone. We are delighted to be back for another issue of Practical Significance. This is the highlight of our day, so we hope that you enjoy as well. And we have two special guests with us to talk about volunteering and serving on ASA committees. And we're really appreciative that Susan and Beau agreed to join us to talk about their experiences and share some insights on how you too can get involved in committee work. But we have a few traditions on Practical Significance, and one of them is to start by asking our guests to tell us a little about their day job. And so, Susan, we'll start with you.
Great. Hi, Donna. I'm happy to be here. It's great to see you. My name is Susan Paddock, and I'm Chief Scientist and Executive Vice President at NORC at the University of Chicago. And NORC is an independent nonprofit research organization. And our focus is to provide trustworthy research and data for our clients, policymakers, and society. Our main substantive areas include health, education, economics, justice, and public affairs. And my role at NORC is to provide strategy and vision to advance our capabilities in statistics, data science, survey methodology, and AI. And we have well over 100 experts in those areas at NORC.
That's great. I didn't realize that there were 100 folks. That's a trivia fact. Good to know. And Beau, we'll go to you. Tell us about your day job.
Thank you, Donna. I'm Beau Li. I'm a professor in statistics and data science at Washington University in St. Louis. It's a new department about almost 2 years old, and I'm also new to the department almost 1 year. So I'm also co-director for the Transdisciplinary Institute for Applied Data Science at WashU. So my daily job has two parts. One is like a regular professor, and we do teaching, research, advising students, and service to the department, to campus, and to our professional society. My co-director job was mainly to work with the other co-director to offer basic data science training to campus, to faculty, students, and everybody who is interested in data science, and also to promote interdisciplinary research and enhance public engagement. So those are the three main tasks for the mission of this, we call it a TRIAS, it's a, just acronym for that institute.
Thanks, Beau. That sounds fascinating. And maybe we'll have to have a podcast all about the nature of the institute and the work. That sounds really fascinating. But for today, we are going to talk about your service to the ASA. And we wanted you to think back to that first time you said yes. Both of you are so generous with your time and have said yes a lot. But the first time that you were motivated to serve on a committee, and Bo, I'll start with you. What initially motivated you to volunteer to serve on an ASA committee?
So in general, if I think I'm a good fit means that I think I can make contributions. And also I have some ideas, have something to say to make the committee, to improve, let's say, to improve the committee's work or to make something new for the society. And also I would try to get some idea about how much time it's going to cost and whether I have the bandwidth to do the work. And if both, I feel I have the bandwidth with, and then I would say yes, because I'm happy to make some contribution to our society. This is where we live, where we work, and where we make friends. So I'm eager to just like serve our society. Yeah, I tend to serve on committee, not just for ASA, and also serve for, let's say, for the campus in general. So when I saw that question, actually, the first thing came to my mind was a thing that I volunteered to serve in a task force on tuition revenue sharing program when I was at UIUC. And the college formed this committee, and I was department chair at that time. I think that committee is very relevant to our department because we have a revenue sharing program, and I feel I do understand how this program work. And I also think whatever policy this committee makes is very important for the department. So I volunteered to serve on that, and so I can bring my knowledge and my opinion to the table. I forgot who asked me to go after the position for the statistical and environmental ENVR section chair for ASA. I love this section. This section is how I kind of grew up in statistical world. And I know the people, and I have benefited from this section activities, and I know the previous chairs. So I think I talked to some of the previous chair and see what kind of responsibilities and how much time it takes for them to run those chair job. I'm eager to serve on that committee. I feel everyone needs to take a turn to serve on that, right? I feel like now I have time to do that. It's really my turn to serve on the committee.
Thanks for that, Bo. And I'm also glad that you mentioned sections, because certainly volunteering and being willing to serve on sections makes a huge contribution to the ASA in addition to committee service. And so, Susan, what motivated you to say yes, maybe that first time, but what continues to motivate you to say yes?
I guess in terms of committee service, I was really fortunate early in my career to be invited to serve on a committee for ASA. I was invited to serve on the Law and Justice Statistics Committee. And I suspect what happened there was that the president-elect of ASA was aware of the work I was doing when I was in the start of my career at the RAND Corporation, because one of the first areas I worked in was illicit drug policy. And so there are, you know, some obvious connections to law and justice statistics. And so I was just really excited that I would have an opportunity to, you know, not only bring my statistical knowledge and the knowledge that I was quickly gaining from the research projects I was on in, you know, drug policy, but to also, you know, be able to contribute to the committee's mission, which is really, really interesting. It's a committee that has a very significant involvement from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and it's a committee that, you know, is composed of statisticians and criminologists and others from the law and justice research community. And so it was a really great opportunity to learn more about that field and to meet new people, and especially for someone at that stage that I was at in my career. And then more recently, I was asked to serve on the Data Science and AI Committee. And that's another really exciting opportunity, and one that I think is super important. And now, given my role on the board, I'm an ex officio member, which is good, because that, you know, meant someone else could come online and formally serve on that committee. And I said yes, because I want to be able to contribute and positively affect our societies and our professions, activities in AI and data science. And my impression is that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I kind of have this feeling in our community that we learned a lot from data science and sort of the rise of data science and how we responded as a profession. And I think with AI, there's just this sense of like excitement and urgency now. And so that's really, really captured by the committee, and not just by data science and AI as a committee, but of course, by all of the activities in the sections and the chapters and the presidential initiatives and in other committees as well, because it's such a cross-cutting topic. And so the Data Science and AI Committee also works closely with other committees, such as Committee on Professional Ethics and others. And so being on a committee is a great opportunity to meet people and to work on things such as, you know, responses for requests for information from the government on what, say, the government be considering and thinking about AI and bringing the voice of statistics and data science to that. So those are really the reasons why I said yes to committee service over the years.
Well, thank you both for being willing to be volunteers. I guess, Donna, when you asked that question, I started thinking back to the first things that I volunteered for at the ASA. And just to show you how long ago this was, the first committee-like thing that I was involved with, after I had been involved in chapters and sections a bit, was a special task force for determining what sort of database the ASA should have. So that's back before everybody had a database, you know, and the database that the ASA had at that time was called file drawers. But anyway, Susan, you've come full circle on this because you have said yes to committees. And now as vice president, one of your responsibilities as chair of the Professional Issues and Visibility Council is to invite people to be on committees. So could you tell our podcast listeners a bit about how the committee appointment process works?
I'm happy to. So let me also just give a bit of context about the committees and about the Professional Issues and Visibility Council that I chair. So there are many committees in the ASA, and so I'm happy to answer that. So let me just give a bit of context about committees and where they sit in ASA. So there are many committees, and some committees have a focus that is internal to ASA. For example, a focus on membership and making sure that members' needs are met. And so there's a membership council that consists of the group of those committees. And so there is a vice president on the board who chairs that council. And I chair the Professional Issues and Visibility Council, which focuses on committees that have an external focus, such as, for example, AI and data science that I just spoke about. And I mentioned the Ethics Committee, and there's many, many other really interesting committees. And then we also have an education council because we have committees that are interested in education, and we also have awards committee as well. There are probably a number of committees of interest probably to every ASA member if I had to make a judgment about that. And so one of the roles that I have with the Professional Issues and Visibility Council is working with the committees and the vice chair of the council to gather names and suggestions for potential committee nominations. Now, formally, it's the president-elect who makes the nominations for the committee members, and that's a big job. And so the councils are there to support the president-elect with those nominations so that we gather suggestions from the committees. And now we ask the committees to also think not just about members who are already on the committee and whether they serve an additional 3-year term, because basically the terms are 3 years long. But we really ask people also to think beyond just their immediate networks. And I know that's a priority of President-elect Jerry Mulroe. She really wants to expand opportunities for those who are earlier in the career or mid-career to have this type of service. And, you know, to kind of have the experience that I talked about at the beginning of this podcast when I was early in my career. But I think that I would encourage everyone who's interested in any of these committees to reach out to committee chair, reach out to a council chair, vice chair, or to fill out the form that's on the AMSTAT webpage, the light bulb form. And that's where you can express interest in serving on these committees. And we want to just make sure that if you have an interest, that your voice is heard. And there might not be a seat for you on a committee, say, next year, but maybe there's a seat the following year or so on. But the most important thing you can do is to reach out and raise your hand and say you're interested in serving on a committee if it looks like something you'd like to do.
And Bo, we're going to ask you to take a deep dive into the committee that you currently chair and how your role on that committee evolved. And you are currently the chair of the Committee on Funded Research. So you might want to tell our listeners a little bit about the committee, but also tell us how you became involved and how you see generating interest in potentially serving on the Committee on Funded Research. Are there activities that folks can participate in without being on the committee, for example? Feel free to think broadly.
So I think how I involved with this committee was because a conversation with Steve Pearson. I remember 1 year at JASM, I was talking with Steve about the work I was currently doing, and I was working on West Nile virus disease, and another project I was working on was for climate data. And both of them were funded by NSF. For the West Nile virus disease, that work was funded by the program called ATD, Anti-Threat Detection at DMS, of DMS. And the climate work was funded by the Atmospheric and the Geospace Science, the AGS program at the NSF GEO Directorate. So that's a little bit unusual for statisticians. And then Steve said, well, there is a committee for funded research, and so probably your expertise can help diversify the grant opportunities for statisticians. So after that conversation, I forgot about it. But then in a couple of years, I think I suddenly was invited to serve on that committee. And so I think it's because of Steve, because he's so super organized and keeps everything in place always. So and then I had that conversation with Steve, so I know what we call it, a CFR. And actually, CFR, the acronym, is really exactly the same as the climate work I was doing at that time, because we call it a climate field reconstruction, also called CFR. So I felt like already in the CFR feeling. So I happily said yes. So I feel this is the committee I should can make some contributions. And then after I joined the committee, I found I really love the work of this committee does. So it basically has two important missions for that committee. And one is to increase the communications and interaction between statisticians and the funding agencies. Funding agencies could include everything like NSF, NIH, those typical ones, but also like a private foundation and even industry funding opportunities. And so we try to broaden our funding opportunity for everybody in our field to bring more resources to develop statistics. And the other mission is to distribute the information to bring the opportunities to everyone in the community. Because even we know that information, but not everyone knows. Probably most statisticians, I think, they usually know NSF, DMS, and the STAT program. But other than that, some people might know, some people might not. So we wanted to bring that information to all the statisticians, especially for the junior researchers, because they just came to this field and they do not have broad knowledge about what can fund their work. And so those two missions are very important to develop our field. And also, I found that all committee members are really friendly. And some of them, I already know them for a long time, they're really my friends. And some of them, I just meet them by working on the committee, get to know them. But all of them, they have very smart and have brilliant ideas. So I really enjoy working with them. And I think this is my 4th year. And for the first 3 years, we had three chairs for this committee. Les Waller was the first one I remember. And then Kate Calder, the second one. And then Vera from Michigan Biostat. Still don't know how to read his last name, but I think there's only one Vera to me. So, and Vera and I came from the same graduate college. We have known each other for a long time. And those three chairs, they are super responsible and creative and bring and very see take the job very serious and did excellent job to advance the grant opportunities. By observing them, like they set up a really good model and make me want to follow their footsteps to try to improve the funding opportunity and also to, especially for our junior researchers, just came to our field to give them enough information where they should apply for grant to support their work. Right now, I think it's a kind of a challenging situation for everybody. So the committee spent a lot of time to discuss what the best we can do. And also we are still discussing like what we can do for this year's JSM, because this committee usually organize a panel to invite like NSF, NIH, and PCORI, and some other like a DOJ, the Department of Justice, and other funding agencies to make a presentation to tell us like what programs they have. And usually they would encourage us to apply for their grants. But this year, I guess it probably very difficult to do that, and we're still discussing that. So if anybody who is going to listen to this podcast and has any idea, I would love them to send me a message. So my email address is very easy, bull@westl.edu.
Yeah, I've enjoyed working with that committee as well. I think one of the opportunities that you give folks who are not on the committee is you invite folks to be presenters at webinars, which is really nice. It's very generous of folks to agree, but it's also a way for someone to contribute without being a formal member of the committee. And so I really appreciate that work.
Well, you mentioned the relationships on the committee, and earlier I referred to the very first committee that I was on, and I'm quite close to someone who I met on that committee 30 some years ago. Unfortunately, neither she nor I have gotten any older in that time period, but boy, our kids sure have. Susan, you mentioned that there are a lot of ASA committees with a lot of different kinds of interests. You mentioned also a form that people can go online and fill out indicating their interest in serving on a committee. So I'm going to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Susan, to give our listeners some advice about how they might find the right committee match for their interests and abilities.
Yeah, so the form is the light bulb form, and it's available on the ASA website. And for those who would like to express interest in serving on a committee, when filling out that form, what would be really helpful would be to indicate which committee or committees you're interested in and to explain why. If you have relevant experience, certainly, put that in your light bulb form. And, we also are not looking necessarily for those with the most experience to serve on the committees. And these are time-limited appointments. And so we, have a mix of people serving at all different career stages. So don't feel like you have to have the perfect resume to say you're interested.
Thanks, Susan. So, Bo, what advice do you have for finding the right committee for someone based on your experiences in deciding whether or not to join certain committees?
First, it's very important to understand the mission and the specific jobs for the committee. Usually, there are some such description online to describe what this committee would do. And then also, if possible, talk to someone who currently serve on the committee or used to serve on this committee and get an idea at the first-hand information for what they have been doing and also how much time this committee require them to contribute. And so, for example, in the for the ENVR, I keep talking about ENVR because that's my home section, the statistics and environment. There are many young and energetic people who wants to be involved in the committee work. And usually if they talk to me, I will just like roughly introduce what the committee does. And then I would suggest a couple of names that have used to serve on this committee or currently is in the committee, ask them to talk to them and get an idea. And sometime I think the committee name, if you think you understand what the committee does based on the name, sometimes it's not exactly as you're expected. So I think it's important to really understand it before you can make your commitment. And also, again, make sure that you are able to make your time to contribute to the committee. I think it will be challenging for both the individual and the committee if that person doesn't have the bandwidth or doesn't have the expertise to serve on it.
Thanks very much. Those are really great suggestions and incredibly helpful. So I always like to ask about what the surprises are. And so, Susan, I'll start with you, but what was an aspect of serving on a committee that you didn't anticipate when you first volunteered? What was a surprise?
Yeah, so I'll go back to when I served on the Law and Justice Statistics Committee in the early 2000s, in the early part of my career, when opportunity I did not anticipate I would have when I agreed to serve on the committee was to be a discussant of some work that was funded basically by BJS, who is the sponsor of the committee. And the work was on different ways of imputing data in two of the key criminal justice data sources. I think it's been over 20 years, but I recall it was Uniform Crime Report and NIBRS. There were two projects that were funded, and I was asked to go to the American Society of Criminology and be a discussant when those projects were presented. So for me, you know, at the time, early in my career, that was a great surprise and a great experience. And also just probably the first time I participated in grant review as a professional. So yeah, sometimes, I mean, the work the committees do can be very far ranging, and it really, you know, just emerges from what the ongoing needs and opportunities are in the fields that are represented by the committees.
That's great and interesting that the committee had that strong connection to another association or society. And I think that's important for folks to be aware of, especially with some of the committees. Bo?
I feel like the most rewarding or the most thing that I enjoy is that I feel I'm doing the right thing that benefit the society that I belong to. And it really makes me happy when sometime I feel that I really helped somebody or I made some improvement, did something useful. So for example, when I was the chair for Cox of Academic Representative, the CAR, that was right after the pandemic. We just started to have in-person meetings. And then at the JSM, we hosted in-person, I think it was the first in-person CAR meeting after the pandemic. And then we hosted some kind of a small mini workshop to talk about the most concerning issues during that time, including like how to encourage faculty and staff back to work, because that time I think all the department chairs struggle with that issue. And we invited people to give a talk and we hold discussions. So I think during that time, the department chairs really need such a platform to exchange ideas and to support each other also. They can complain to each other, but it's also, I think, a kind of a mental support. So that's not something very big, but I feel good about it because I think we organized those activities people can really benefit from. I think another great thing serving on the committee is that I can learn so many things and I learn how things work. And also I get to know people. So I get to know all the committee members, my colleagues who serve on that committee. And I get to know their brilliant minds and to learn how other people can turn the ideas into action and make a difference. So I always feel like I learn quite a bit by serving on the committee and working with other members.
So thank you both. Obviously, you have found committee service to be rewarding and occasionally surprising in good ways. And so, Susan, we've established during this podcast that you've done quite a few things over quite a few years. What advice would you give to someone who wants to become more involved in ASA service?
The advice I would give would be, if at all possible, to first of all show up to some ASA meetings because it's such a great opportunity to meet people and find out what the opportunities are, and for people to get to know you and your interests. And I even just start from the beginning, especially for people who are like brand new to going to conferences, brand new to ASA. If you're going to a meeting, volunteer to chair a session. Session chairs are always needed. And you actually learn a lot and connect with a lot of people when you volunteer to do that. In fact, there's someone whose very first JSM talk, I was the chair of that session, and he still brings it up to me like 20 plus years later. And it's just really fun. And I will also say, like, the way I really became heavily involved in ASA was through sections. And I think sections are really wonderful because when we enter ASA, we usually have, some very particular areas of activity and focus. There's, several sections and geared toward topics that range from specific methodologies, such as a Bayesian section, which I've been a member of since graduate school, to substantively focused sections, such as the environment section or health policy statistics. And so there, it really is something for everyone in those sections. And the sections have their own activities, everything from mixers and business meetings at JSM to even hosting their own webinars and conferences. Another way I know a lot of people get involved with ASA is through chapters, which are locally focused, and there are lots of chapters around the United States. And that can be a great way to become more involved with ASA, especially if you're interested in, having that local interaction and focus. I don't even live in Washington, D.C., and I'm a member of the D.C. chapter because a lot of the people with whom we work at NORC happen to be in DC as well. So yeah, there are many, many different ways to get involved in the ASA.
Thanks, Susan. And you've tried out a lot of them, so appreciate that very much. Bo, you mentioned earlier that you love to help people and you love to help the association. And we know very well that's true. And we have to ask about your new role as the editor of ASA Discoveries, the ASA's brand new journal. So we want to know what it's like to be the inaugural editor of an ASA journal. So will you give us a little sneak peek at that and at what you and your editorial team are planning for ASA Discoveries? And this is something that I am very excited about.
Yeah, of course. I cannot help talking about it either, honestly. So I'm quite honored to be the inaugural editor of this ASA journal. But honestly, I was a little anxious when ASA checked with me about this task. And I talked to a few people, including Donna and Ron. You remember that? And I also talked with Kathy Anser and my department chair, Ximing. And I also consulted Marina Venuti, a professor at Rice, because she just started a new journal. And I received lots of encouragements and support from them. So I really appreciate it. And everything has been moving along very well. I'm excited about its launching. It's on its way. And currently, I already have a very excellent editorial board. I have four outstanding co-editors: Sebastian Hanus, he's at Harvard University, and Galen Jones from University of Minnesota, Shujie Ma from University of California, Riverside, and Abel Rodriguez from University of Washington. So they all represent like different fields. Say Sebastian is in Boston for biostatistics, and Galen is in computation and physical science, and Shujie is excellent in theoretical work. And Abel is social science and also computation. So I think we have a very comprehensive and a diversified group on our editorial board. And all of them also have rich experience in editorial work. Some of them already were editors for other journals. So I think they will help me a lot in this journey. And we have spent a lot of time to discuss about the vision of the journal and the article types we wanted to include for this journal. So I wanted to make two points about the vision of this journal. One is it will be an open access journal. This is to ensure that research findings are freely available to the global scientific community and the public. So I think this is a more equal access to the research findings because some people, some region may not have the resource to pay for the journal to get the article. And then the second point is we welcome all significant contributions to the advancement of statistical and data-driven research, either in theory or practice. So basically, we want all the work that can help make statistics remain pivotal in emerging research fields. And we wanted to promote a broad and inclusive scope of work. And I think those visions also align with what Ron proposed to me at the beginning. I think probably ASA has thought a lot about what the vision for this journal. And because of that, and then we have made a plan for the article types we wanted to publish. Some are traditional article types, and some are not traditional. We hope to provide a more flexible platform for sharing ideas and discoveries. So I wanted to give just like a list of article types that we wanted to include. So research articles, review articles, those are the traditional article types that every statistical journal probably include. And not very traditional ones include data notes. So this is a brief description of a data set to promote, of a data set to promote reuse. Data notes have to include a data availability statement and at least one data citation. And these notes should not include analyses or conclusions, just provide a note for people to use. Another one is a research letter. So this would be a short scholarly communication, which may be original research or a comment in relation to a published work. And the third one is rapid communication. So this one would be the fast-breaking research updates or other news item. So I think this one is very helpful for the society to quickly get some very important research discoveries and also some important news. And the fourth one is a letter to the editor. So this can be miscellaneous correspondence to the journal's editorial office that is not specifically a comment on or a response to a published article, but just a letter to the editor, maybe to talk about the vision of our society, of our field. And so, as I mentioned, the Taylor and the Francis publisher, they are very supportive, and we met a few times already. And they basically have everything they need right now, and they are currently finalizing the details for launching the journal. So please stay tuned.
Thanks, Bo, and we will make sure that the word gets out widely as we're ready to launch. And we're looking forward to people seeing your initial editorial for the journal and getting ready to submit their work in those various categories.
Well, I started with a tradition, and so we have two traditions by which we end the podcast. And the first one is to ask folks what's on their to-be-read list or what they're listening to, watching, movies, all of the above. So, Susan, I'll start with you.
Sure. Well, I will tell you about a book that just came out this month, and I just received my copy a few days ago and just started to read it. And the book is called Fact Forward: The Perils of Bad Information and the Promise of a Data-Savvy Society. And the author of this book is Dan Galen, who is actually a colleague of mine. He's the president and CEO of NORC. And so there's a lot of excitement, of course, at NORC about this new book. And I'm excited because the book is aimed at a wide audience. And this is really, I think a crowd pleaser because it's going to be of interest to, people such as ASA members who are data savvy and are very interested in topics such as data literacy, data quality, quality of information, and also interested in topics such as the public data infrastructure. And it's accessible enough that you can give this book to someone who is not as enthusiastic about statistics and data as we are, and they would also get a lot out of it. So that's the book that I am reading right now.
That's great. I'm definitely adding that to my list. As soon as we're done, I'll order that. Bo, what are you reading, listening to, watching, all of the above?
So the book that I wanted to read currently is called Chronicles by Bob Dylan. And the reason was because I recently watched the movie A Complete Unknown. I love the movie and it's fantastic. And I was a little disappointed it didn't get an Oscar award because I feel like in my mind it's much better than Anora that I also watched. Anora is a great movie, but I love A Complete Unknown. And because of that, I become a huge fan of Bob Dylan. And I wanted to read The Chronicles by him. That's a biography for the same time period in the movie. So I really wanted to get that. And also, I wanted to share one TV shows that I watched that feels so powerful. It's The Baby Reindeer. I don't know how many of you have watched that. Yeah, it's really powerful and somehow sticks to my mind that I wanted to share. And as I grew up in China, so I also watch lots of shows and read things produced in China. But I think The Chronicles, and this is really a book I want to read.
That's great. A Complete Unknown is on my to-be-watched list. You've made it rise to the top. Well, and we have a final tradition on practical significance, and that is to end with Ron's top 10. So I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ron.
Thank you, Donna. We're headed into summer, and maybe you are thinking about getting away. Always ready to help, the Practical Significance Podcast presents the top 10 dream getaways for statisticians and data scientists. We do remind listeners that these vacations, while appealing, can require a significant investment of time, money, and degrees of freedom. Number 10, Chi Square Beach. You can test whether this location is a good fit for you. Number 9, the Bajan Islands. Each time you go, you'll update your beliefs about how much you enjoy it. Number 8, Kurtosis Cove. Perfect for travelers who enjoy extreme values in their vacation experiences. Number 7, Markov Shores. On this beautiful coastline, your next destination depends solely on your current location, not how you got there. Number 6, Bootstrapping Bayou. From a sample of this destination's beauty, visitors can estimate how much they will enjoy their entire vacation here. Number 5, Boisson Point. The finest seafood, and guests can estimate the time when their meal will arrive without needing to know how long it has been since the previous guest was served. Number 4, Regression Reef. Happiness increases linearly with each day spent snorkeling here. Number 3, Colonel Heights, a majestic mountain range with smoothed peaks offering non-parametric views of the valley below. Number 2, Quartile Key. This quaint harbor town is divided into 4 distinct districts, each containing exactly 25% of the tourist locations. And the number 1 dream getaway for statisticians and data scientists, Monte Carlo. You didn't think we'd forget this, did you? Come here to enjoy the law of large numbers, but watch out for the curse of dimensionality. Well, that's it for this episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
Whether you're publishing a paper, exploring data for the first time, or running complex statistical models, you know how important it is to trust the tools you're working with. For over 40 years, Stata has supported researchers, analysts, and data scientists with powerful, reproducible statistical software. With Stata, there's no need for extra modules or hidden add-ons. You get powerful statistics, robust data management, seamless automated reporting, and publication-ready visualizations, all in one intuitive platform. Trusted by industry leaders for over 4 decades, Stata continues to deliver accurate, reproducible results you can rely on. So stop focusing on your software and focus on what matters, your research, so you can share your results with confidence. Discover how Stata can power your research and analysis by visiting stata.com/amstatpod. That's stata.com/amstatpod.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.